Welcome to Maryland Perspectives with Amelia on 98 Rock.
Planned Parenthood is the largest single provider of reproductive health services for women, men, and families who don't have access to health care across the United States. There are many misconceptions of who uses Planned Parenthood, who funds Planned Parenthood, and what the organization actually does right here in Maryland over the last 85 years. And with House Speaker Paul Ryan introducing legislation to defund Planned Parenthood, it is more important than ever to clear up the misconceptions. Joining me this morning is President and CEO of Planned Parenthood Maryland, Karen Nelson. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Karen, tell us who you are helping in Maryland and the services that your organization is providing.
We are honored to be able to serve around 40,000 patients every single year in the state of Maryland. These are folks that are coming to us for preventative health care. That's life-saving cancer screenings, birth control, well woman visits, health education and counseling.
And that would include also STD screenings, AIDS screenings, which some
Absolutely.
People would just let them go because they're like, I can't afford to go see a doctor.
Planned Parenthood is known for never turning anyone away. We have free or low cost services. We believe healthcare shouldn't matter how much money you make, shouldn't matter what zip code you live in, shouldn't matter who you are or who you identify with, that everyone is deserving of preventative healthcare. One in five women from across the entire United States has visited a Planned Parenthood during her lifetime.
So what do you think is the biggest obstacle right now facing Planned Parenthood and its mission to provide health services?
It's twofold. First of all, we're in a political situation right now where you have members of Congress who are quite vocally and quite vehemently trying to take away the services that Planned Parenthood offers every single day in our health centers. You've had members of Congress coming out saying they're going to defund Planned Parenthood. We are very lucky in the state of Maryland that the majority of our congressional representatives and our senators, of course, support the work of Planned Parenthood and are clear partners. But across the country, that is not the case. And we saw it all through the entire presidential election. Planned Parenthood was brought up over and over again. We believe that politics should not get in the way of health care, that health care decisions should be made between a patient, between a woman and her doctor and her family and those that she chooses to bring in, not by politicians.
All right, let's get into that. Let's break it down by percentage of services provided. Obviously, the biggest one and the one that they throw around saying that it's pretty much the only thing you do, and we're talking about abortions. Out of all the health services that Planned Parenthood provides, what's the percentage of abortions to all of that?
When you look across the country, above 90% of what we do is preventative health care. Again, that those are the STD testings that you talked about. Those are the well woman exams. That's health education. By far and wide, the women that come to us are coming to us for preventative health care and to receive birth control. Yes, of course we provide abortion. We believe it is a part of women's health care, and as advocates, we will strongly stand behind that service because we want to make it safe and available.
When people, you get into the politics of it, they're saying, well, you know, if we're going to give you funds, you can no longer provide that service. But from everything I've read, all of the federal funding that Planned Parenthood receives nationwide is not used for abortions.
That is absolutely true. It is illegal for us to use federal funds for abortion. So therefore, that is not done. I think that is the misconception at times.
If the federal government stopped funding Planned Parenthood, where does that leave you monetarily? Do you then solely rely upon donations from the general public? I mean, how much of those funds actually keep Planned Parenthood alive?
Well, when we talk about defunding, I think that it's really important to emphasize what we're talking about. You're not talking about a giant chunk of money that the federal government hands over to Planned Parenthood that can just be kind of carved out and given to someone else to provide those services. What they're talking about is not allowing Planned Parenthood to participate in the Medicaid program. So like every other healthcare provider, when a patient comes to visit us, if they're using Medicaid or Medicaid-managed care, we provide a healthcare service and then bill for that service through the Medicaid program and are reimbursed. And so that happens every healthcare center across Maryland and across the United States when somebody comes with Medicaid-managed care or a Medicaid card. And so what they're saying is, Planned Parenthood, you can no longer provide these services, or you can provide these services, we're just not going to reimburse you through the Medicaid program. And we feel that this is really terrible because patients should be able to see the provider that they know, that they trust, and that they choose to go to. And by just eliminating an important provider, the place that they can receive compassionate and confidential care is just crazy.
The stories that we're getting, too, through not just the media, but also in dramatizations, I'm starting to see situations of poor young people that are trying to get health care. The Outsiders comes to mind. It's a television show on WGN, and they showed a young woman who needed to get in a car and go across state lines. And then when she was trying to get these services, they told her she had to come back after signing a piece of paper. And it's just a way to keep these people from getting the health services that they need through state legalities and all these different crazy laws that are happening. And I find that the more we tell those types of stories and bring them to the forefront, I think you get more empathy, you know, from all sides, whether you're conservative or liberal.
Yeah. In terms of empathy, when you think about a woman, we like to say you can't walk in another person's shoes. You can't walk in another woman's shoes. And we also say every choice has a story. And again, one in five women have been to a Planned Parenthood, and many women have been there in a time of crisis. I think you're right. The more people that do tell their stories publicly, it does two things. It creates an understanding in the community. It creates an understanding with those who might not choose that service for themselves. And what it also it does is starts to reduce the stigma that is associated by many with abortion care. Again, this is an option for so many women and an important health care option.
Well, and birth control, too, just being able to have access to that, having access to free condoms. You're helping out with STDs and with the spread of AIDS. I could go on and on. I think there's a need for Planned Parenthood. The tone right now that's being taken, not just politically, but also on a personal level. It's, it smacks of 1937, and here we are in 2017. You just wonder sometimes, like, well, what happened to tolerance and what happened to, you know, my right to women's health care, you know, if I don't have the money for it? But I don't want to get up on a soapbox like I just did, Karen.
I've been at a lot of rallies lately.
I bet.
And they're not just about Planned Parenthood. And there are just so many people saying, I cannot believe we are still talking about this.
I know. It's crazy. It's just it's disconcerting, really. And since the D.C. Women's March in January, Planned Parenthood has become really very active and has a ton of events to raise awareness for women's health and for different issues that face women today. How can people find out more to either participate, volunteer, or donate to Planned Parenthood in Maryland?
Absolutely. Visit our website. If you go to PlannedParenthood.org/Maryland, you can find out about all of the events. We have a special link to our spring gala, which is going to be our 12th annual spring gala, and that's held on April 20th at the American Visionary Art Museum. So really cool location, and It will be a very fun event. It is our premier fundraising event of the year. And that's at ppm.care/spring gala. And then, of course, you can always go to the Facebook page and get all the information that you need.
Well, I tell you what, Karen Nelson, she is the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood right here in Maryland. Thank you so much for taking the time. I'll post these links up on my blog at 98online.com. And I can't thank you enough for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Maryland Perspectives will continue in a moment on 98 Rock.
Join St. Jude Children's Research Hospital at the 8th Annual Hope in the Harbor Gala at the Visionary Art Museum in Baltimore Thursday, April 27th. This event raises funds to continue the mission of St. Jude to treat children diagnosed with cancer at no cost to their families and conduct research to find cures and save children's lives. That's the Hope in the Harbor Gala, April 27th at the American Visionary Arts Museum. For more info, visit stjude.org/hopeintheharbor.
I'm sorry, no more questions. That'll be all.
Hi, I'm Michael Kelly. As an actor, sometimes I play a character that has to deal with addiction. But that addiction ends with the word cut. Governor, we're here to tell you about a harsh reality that is having a devastating effect on our nation and in Maryland.
I'm Larry Hogan, Governor of Maryland. Opioid and heroin addiction affects Marylanders of all ages and demographics, and in particular, our youth.
This addiction is destroying families and lives. The governor and I urge you to speak with your kids about the importance of this issue.
Please go to mddestinationrecovery.org or call 1-800-422-0009 to find out more information about treatment resources, naloxone, and how to respond to an overdose. Speak with your children before it's too late.
Unlike acting, life doesn't have second takes.
Join the Nicole Van Horn Foundation for their 17th annual event for the Johns Hopkins Pediatric Oncology Department and the Believe in Tomorrow Foundation at Martin's East on Pulaski Highway in Middle River, Friday, March 31st. Come eat, drink, and bid on auction items throughout the evening and help the foundation give back to the organizations that were there for Nicole's battle with cancer and celebrate her life. That's the Nicole Van Horn 17th annual fundraiser at Martin's East in Middle River, March 31st. Head to nvhfund.org for more info.
Welcome back to Maryland Perspectives on 98 Rock. Here again is Amelia.
Over the last few weeks, I have talked to a lot of nonprofits about everything from healthcare to sex trafficking to drug addiction. And one thing we always come back to is poverty and how it affects society as a whole and families right here in Baltimore. The statistics are staggering in the city and spread out into the state. When one in four people in Baltimore live in a food desert, it takes a lot of people to pitch in and make a change. That's where St. Vincent de Paul Baltimore comes in. Joining me this morning is the Vice President of Development and Marketing for St. Vincent de Paul. It's Jennifer Summers. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
The mission is simple, to give people who live in poverty every opportunity to get out of it. So let's start with Child and Family Services. What does the organization do for them?
We have a number of things that we do, really, in the idea of combating poverty. First of all, it's working with the youngest generation to really work to break that cycle. So we know a lot of people who live in poverty, it's cyclical in their family, and they haven't had the opportunity, especially in the education area. So we are one of the largest providers of Head Start in Baltimore City, serving about nearly 750 families. And that's really giving the youngest members of our community a head start in life, so giving them a good base of education so when they do arrive at kindergarten, they're ready to learn. And we know that by providing that, there's a higher chance that they'll finish and complete successfully high school and then even go on to college.
What about families that are homeless? I know you work with a lot of the homeless in the city. How do you combat that?
We run the largest shelter in the city for homeless families, Sarah's Hope, which is located in the Sandtown Winchester neighborhood. Sarah's Hope expanded through a renovation about a year and a half ago, and we can serve roughly 100 families. And so we have on any given night, it's a 131-bed facility, so on any given night we can have 35 to 45 families with us. And it's really taking those that have found themselves homeless for whatever reason, whether it's through an eviction process, falling off sort of that fiscal cliff, as we talk about, but they found themselves in a situation where they need a safe and secure place to stay. And so when they're at the shelter, we provide case management. We work with each family at where they are to help them understand, how do we move beyond this and how do we get you back to self-sufficiency as a family? So whether it's workforce development, employment opportunities, whether it's advocating for them in the housing area, whatever it may be, we work towards self-sufficiency. And so families on average stay up to 3 months, and then the majority of which move on into a permanent housing situation. And we also offer programs where we provide that housing. So we run an amazing program called Front Door, which takes families and puts them immediately into permanent housing, provides them some not only support in multiple ways, but really it's helping them find a place and working with them to become stabilized. And they become self-sufficient and live in those apartments or homes permanently.
Well, and like you said, too, it's all about giving them skills to go out into the workforce and get the job training that they need. And you provide that as well.
We do. So we have two drop-in centers, career centers, and we have a number of employment skills professionals that work in each of our sites. So if you're a family at Head Start, we're going to work with you on employment services. If you're a family living in the shelter, we're going to do the same. So we do it throughout our programs. And really, you know, employment is a big key, you know, part of moving out of poverty and finding not just a job, but getting into a path where you can get a career and get a self, you know, a wage that's a living wage. And that's really the idea. And we also provide a program called Next Course, which is a food service training program. And that's one of the growing areas of employment opportunities here in Maryland. So whether it's through casinos or large hospitals, there are, you know, or food service, whether restaurants, caterers, there's opportunity in there in the food service industry.
The hardest thing to know about our city, because all of us love it so much, and knowing that people are struggling and people are hurting, and even when they do have a job and they are just sort of scraping by, there's nowhere to go for food. They don't have grocery stores. Let's talk about the food deserts in the city. Explain what they are for people that may not be familiar and how St. Vincent de Paul is trying to change that.
Food deserts are just as you described. You know, they're areas in which people don't have access to fresh food. So, you know, you live in a place where a grocery store is not nearby. You don't have access to things other than, you know, maybe prepackaged things that you would find at a pharmacy, you know, or drop-in convenience store. Mm-hmm. But you don't have access to really food that we would think of stopping by the grocery store and picking up a meal to make for our family. There are a lot of things that we're doing. We have a number of what we call parish conferences. So those are really volunteer groups that are based in the community. And a lot of them are providing food. So they'll have food pantries. They'll be providing access to that for families. Some of them may offer meals themselves. We have, for those that don't have access to meals that are either homeless or can't really afford, especially at the end of the month when kind of things have run out, to really provide, we offer places where people can drop by and get a meal. Beans and Bread in Fells Point is one of them. We're providing meals each day. And so, you know, we're trying to bring food and help people have access to that food. In the summer months, our kids' table program helps distribute food. So often when kids, especially in the summertime, kids don't have access to food when they're out of the school system. So, you know, for a kid, you go to school and you have access to free food each day if you're eligible. But what do you do on the weekend, or what do you do in the summer when school's not in session?
Yeah.
And so we work with a lot of programs in the community. That's a huge thing for these kids, which is why we provide meals at our Head Start sites. Learn and be productive if you haven't eaten.
Yeah, and yeah, going through life hungry is no way to go, and that just leads you into more nefarious aspects of, you know, you're struggling, you're desperate, and what are you going to do for food? Well, when we're really hungry, we're going to do things that we're not too proud of. So, you know, I was reading the history, Jennifer, and you've been around since the Civil War. Is that true?
Hard to believe, but we are one of the oldest organizations in the state. We've been around for over 150 years.
Wow.
We started with groups, volunteers, people who, believe it or not, were giving out coal to heat your home and bread and other food and other necessities that people needed to get by each day. So we don't deliver coal anymore.
But now look at you, all the services you offer, and it's really an amazing thing that you're doing. And, you know, I was driving down Urban Avenue, because that's the way I go back and forth from work, and I saw one of the trucks that had the big logo on the side, and I'm thinking, oh man, I know those folks. I just met them, and they're really cool.
Yeah.
What's in the truck? Where are they going? I almost followed it. But you're definitely on display in the city, and you have several ways to get involved through volunteering and donations. Let's talk about your big fundraiser called Empty Bowls. Give us some info on that.
So Empty Bowls is in its 11th year, and it's coming up on March 25th at the Timonium Fairgrounds. And we used to have two seatings for the last few years, but we have upgraded to a bigger building. We're in the exhibition hall this year, and we're going to have one longer, larger seating for folks. It's a wonderful family-friendly event. Tickets are $25 a piece. When you come in, you get to help yourself to, we're having right now, we have 18 different soups from different restaurants throughout the Baltimore City and Baltimore County that have donated their amazing soups. And so you can come in, taste all kinds of soups, get dessert. You can purchase drinks if you wish. You can put some bid on some great silent auction items. There's a great kids area for kids to get their face painted, do caricatures. We're going to have a photo booth this year, so it's a really fun event. And as part of that, your ticket price, you get to take home with you an empty bowl. So we have hundreds and hundreds of volunteers throughout the community that throughout the year have painted bowls, have handmade bowls, schools, churches, Girl Scout troops, all kinds of folks, corporations. They've decorated these bowls, and they have been prepared and glazed, and they're ready for folks to come in and find that perfect bowl that speaks to you. And then you get to take it home. And really, for us, it's giving you the reminder of all of the empty bowls in our community and the importance of supporting organizations and programs that really help those in our community that are struggling. And again, it's in its 11th year, and it's just a fun way to support a great cause, a great organization.
And it's brilliant is what it is.
With a lot.
Where can people grab their tickets? And if they can't make that date, where can they find out more and donate and pitch in?
To buy tickets, you can visit EmptyBowlsBaltimore.org or visit our main website, which is VincentBaltimore.org. And either way, you can get a link to getting tickets. You can make a donation. You can find out how to volunteer, how you can get more involved. There's lots people can do in our community.
Well, Jennifer, I will put those links up on my blog at 98online.com. Jennifer Summers is the Vice President of Development and Marketing, and I thank you so much for talking to us this morning. And keep up those good works. You guys at St. Vincent de Paul Baltimore are amazing.
Thank you so much. We appreciate all your support.
Maryland Perspectives will continue in a moment on 98 Rock.
In part three of WBAL News Radio 1090 and Kramer's series on sex trafficking in Maryland, we meet some of the law enforcement officials to see how they save women from trafficking online, in the field, and go after the traffickers themselves. Here's Ann.
Several times a month in Maryland, a handful of law enforcement officers work on a proactive operation to try and find girls who are victims of sex trafficking. Several troopers spend hours poring over websites and searching sex ads for those young victims.
I'm Corporal Chris Hyde. I work with our child recovery unit here at the Maryland State.
That's fine. While we're waiting.
I'm going to call this one. We set up dates, and we'll pull together a list, and we might go in Baltimore one day. We might go near BWI one day. We might go to Western Maryland one day, and we'll pull ads in that specific area, and we'll make dates.
I'm making a call, guys.
These are the kind of ads that we would look at because she is hiding her face. And some girls will do that, but typically a juvenile is going to hide her face a lot more than a normal person would. The poses that she's in is just very uncomfortable.
Sergeant Ron Riggin is the team's leader.
When we do our proactive operations, the goal is to identify juveniles. And second, with a close third, is to get intel on other operations or other victims. And then, of course, to identify traffickers.
After making several dates, the undercover task force made up of the troopers and an FBI agent start rolling out. We get to tag along for the night. First stop, the La Quinta Hotel in Jessup. The team finds two women in the room who came to Baltimore from California. They start asking them questions. After some hesitation, one of the prostitutes allows me into the room.
I've never had this exact experience before. I've been arrested before, but I've never had people come in and want to talk to you or anything like that. Mostly it's just cut to the chase, take you down, book you, and release you.
The guy in charge, say he's got 20 girls working for him. He could be in 20 hotels in 3 different states, and he'll have them send them the money, and they'll do it because they're so scared of it.
Another member of the team, Sergeant Debbie Flory, runs the women's IDs through a national crime database. The 23-year-old prostitute says that she's independent, no pimp. But she does tell police she posted fake pictures of herself in the ads.
The fake picture thing is just because there's like a level of discreetness you want. I said my family knows that I do this, but I don't necessarily want it thrown in their face if someone was ever see that.
Police don't generally arrest the women during this type of operation unless other crimes are involved or they have any outstanding warrants. Back in his SUV as the rain picks up, Sergeant Riggin explains.
One of them has provided us with some very good intelligence that we will utilize our task force members in another state to run down that lead. Hey, Chris, you want us to do a rendezvous point prior to this, or are you going to make the call now?
Your position.
The next date has been set up with a woman at the Red Roof Inn on Elkridge Landing Road near BWI. Again, Corporal Hyde suspects she is 17 or younger.
We're here to help you, honestly. It's all we're here to do is help you.
I think everybody there knew that she was being trafficked. There was a lot of signs that there was a pimp involved.
Amelia Rubenstein from the nonprofit Turnaround was part of the team that night. The prostitute in the room was 18 and again from California. While the women weren't underage, the team did get some leads. All the women declined any help to get out of the game. For these veteran officers, they never know what they'll find when meeting a date.
You sort of expect to see bad things. This is pretty far in the extreme when you have a 12-year-old girl watching cartoons while she's waiting for her trafficker to come back to the hotel room.
Tomorrow.
It's happening everywhere. It's happening in houses. It's happening in apartments. It's happening in hotel rooms.
Ann Kramer, WBAL and WBAL.com.
You've been listening to Maryland Perspectives, a community information resource. If your organization would like to be on Maryland Perspectives, please contact Amelia at 410-338-6458 or email ameliawiyy@hearst.com. You can find the links to her guests on her blog at 98online.com. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its participants and not necessarily those of 98 Rock, its management, or advertisers.